This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The European Union is urging countries to show their concrete solidarity and allow the 49 migrants trapped on these two humanitarian ships to disembark at a safe port.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Gabon closes its border crossings with Cameroon since yesterday's attempted coup against President Ali Bongo. The man who has become the face of Mozambique's debt crisis appears in a Johannesburg courtroom in what is expected to be a long, complicated trial. And Madagascar's top court rules Andry Rajoelina wins the presidential election. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Gabon has closed border crossings with Cameroon since yesterday's attempted coup against President Ali Bongo, halting trade and leaving Gabonese unable to return home. Goods and passengers destined for Gabon are stranded in Cameroon's border town of Kiosi, Moki Edwin Kinsiga reports.
Trucks loaded with plantain, cocoyam, granuts and other vegetables sit idle, along with several hundred commuters in the town of Kiosi on Cameroon's southern border with Gabon. Gabonese businessman Luc Eyene says Gabon's border troops stopped him from crossing over from Cameroon. The government ordered the closure to protect civilians, Eyene says they told him, after Monday's attempted coup against ailing President Ali Bongo. He says even though Gabon is in a political crisis that could turn violent if Bongo does not recover, it is unpardonable for anyone to seal the border. It is known by everyone that Gabon depends on Cameroon for food, says Eyene. The poor are already suffering after just 24 hours of the border being closed, he says. Traders like Eyene fear their perishable goods will not last until the border reopens. Cameroonian businesswoman Caroline Zifo supplies farm produce to Gabon. She says she was forced to make arrangements to take her goods to Equatorial Guinea instead.
We are just suffering because of the control that are they are blocking Gabonese. There are four control. Even more than four. So they are blocking Gabonese. Business is no more moving here in Abamiko.
Hannesson Ketong Konge is the highest ranking Cameroonian official along the border with Gabon. He says they have been discussing reopening the border with Gabonese authorities in the town of Bitam, just across the border.
We are in full discussions with my colleagues in Bitam to see how we can facilitate transit in these border towns.
Sylvanus Mba, a member of Gabon's main opposition group, the Coalition for the New Republic, was traveling in Cameroon when the border was closed. He says his group does not have links with the rebels, but added that many Gabonese, including himself, would have celebrated if the coup had succeeded.
Le Gabon appartient à tous les Gabonais. Ce n'est pas une seule personne qui va durer pendant 50.
He says Gabon belongs to all the people of Gabon, not an individual whose family has ruled for over 51 years and is not showing signs of leaving power even when his health is failing him. Ali Bongo should know that there are very competent citizens of Gabon who can lead the country out of misery, says Mba. The rebel troops appeared on state television early Monday, announcing the coup was intended to restore democracy. But by Monday night, the government of Gabon said it had regained control and arrested seven rebel soldiers. Government forces killed two other soldiers involved in the coup attempt. Authorities also cut the internet and imposed a curfew on Gabon's capital, Libreville. Tanks and armored vehicles were patrolling the city and airports were shut down. President Bongo has been in Morocco since October, receiving treatment for a stroke. He acknowledged having health problems in a New Year's Day message. Bongo succeeded his father Omar Bongo as president in 2009 and narrowly won re-election in 2016 poll, marred by violence and accusations of fraud. His family has been accused of profiting off the country's natural resources while Gabon's 2 million citizens struggle to meet their everyday needs. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Kiosi, Southern Cameroon.
The man who has become the face of Mozambique's debt crisis appeared today in a Johannesburg courtroom facing extradition to the U.S. on charges he participated in taking out a secret $2 billion loan that plunged the nation into crisis. The case against former Mozambican Finance Minister Manuel Chang marks the first step in what is expected to be a long, complicated intercontinental trial. VOA's Anita Powell was there in Johannesburg for the first step.
Manuel Chang spent less than an hour in the dock on Tuesday, appearing confident and relaxed in jeans and a blue blazer, as South African lawyers discussed the fate of the former finance minister. Chang was arrested last month in a U.S. investigation into Mozambique's massive debt scandal. But no one thinks that this trial, which spans four continents, will be quick or easy. Chang is one of several dozen people now implicated on both sides of the Atlantic in the case that led the coastal nation to suffer a debt crisis so severe it has deprived citizens of the most essential services, like road and hospital maintenance. Elpidio Mutembo was one of several Mozambican activists who came to watch Chang's court appearance Tuesday. Mutembo told VOA he was glad Chang had been arrested in South Africa and will, if the extradition order is heeded, be tried in the U.S., even if it slows down the process. Mutembo shrugged at the news that Mozambican officials had just a day earlier indicted 18 people in connection to the case. Mozambique, he argued, has known about this scandal since 2016, when the loan was discovered. And these are the very first signs of movement from Mozambican authorities.
We don't trust our justice system, as we have many pending cases whereby if we can try to follow up, they didn't come up with any solution to the justice was never done. So we do believe it may be outside, and not only because it will be outside, but we do believe that those who are really still implicated in the matter can fall with him.
A U.S. grand jury indictment issued last week by the Eastern District of New York accuses seven people, including Chang, of creating maritime projects as fronts to raise money to enrich themselves and intentionally divert portions of the loan proceeds to pay at least $200 million in bribes and kickbacks to themselves, Mozambique government officials, and others. Like many financial crimes cases, it is rife with details and technicalities. One such technicality is the basis the grand jury used in its indictment, that one of the financial institutions allegedly involved was required to report its doings to U.S. authorities. Chang was arrested last month in South Africa on what officials said was a U.S. extradition warrant, although his lawyers argued Tuesday that proper procedures were not followed. Chang's lawyer, Willie Vermeulen, argued that based on a technicality, his client should be released on bail.
And the only basis for a provisional arrest is Article 13 of the treaty. That is all, thank you. I ask you accordingly to release Mr. Chang.
Mutembo, the activist, says he is happy to follow this complicated tale to the end, wherever that leads. He suspects many more names will come out in the course of the investigation, including the former president, Armando Guebuza, and the current president, Filipe Nyusi, who was defense minister at the time of the loans, taken between 2013 and 2014.
You can't tell me that he didn't know that there was an agreement of a loan of a huge amount of that nature.
When you
all
say
of them.
The president, do you mean President Guebuza or do you mean President
Nyusi? I'm saying about President Guebuza, although even Nyusi was there in the regime. But even now, as a president, Nyusi is there, he never pronounced anything. But we want to hear from him as a president.
The hearing resumes Wednesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
As the world awaits the results from the DRC's presidential and parliamentary elections, the number of Congolese nationals crossing into Rwanda's Rubavu and Rusizi districts has increased. Those who have sought permission to stay temporarily in Rwanda say they fear possible conflict at home once the results are issued. Eugene Uimana reports from the border area.
Here at the DRC border in Rubavu, Western Rwanda, it's around 2 p.m. Congolese steadily cross the border with the language. This entry point normally has high movement from both sides, but Ruvu residents say the flow from the DRC began to surge on the eve of the DRC election December 13th. Arfan Lashidi is a Rwandan real estate broker. He says they have had a large number of Congolese people asking for houses to rent. He says it is different from other normal days. It seems like they are fleeing. Some hotels and guest houses in Rubavu town have been fully booked by Congolese nationals as well as employees of some international aid organizations who crossed the border fearing possible post-election incidents. Christelle Bashunga is one of the Congolese nationals who is temporarily staying in Rubavu. She says her family decided to leave their country because they are not guaranteed security. She says officials informed us that any person who goes on the road to protest will be jailed because they already know them. She says they wonder how the police know who are the people who plan to protest. And there are a lot of soldiers and policemen crossing the streets. That's why people are very afraid. The mayor of Rubavu District, Gilbert Habyarimana, says the district and other partners are working to control the traffic to protect residents and visitors to the area. What is true is that a number of Congolese people who cross our borders has increased significantly, especially for those who prefer to spend their nights in Rubavu town due to security concerns. The election was to have been held 2 years ago, but President Joseph Kabila's government postponed it, repeatedly saying preparations could not be done in time. Kabila, who has been in office for 18 years, is constitutionally barred from running in this election. The DRC Election Commission has delayed announcing the results of the December 13th vote. Results were due on January 6th. The commission said due to the poor infrastructure, the vote counting was not done. The government has shut down the internet to avoid rumors dissemination. The DRC's neighbors, donors, nations, the United Nations and humanitarian agencies have called for peace and calm during the election period. Ejen Wimana for VOA News, Rubavu District on the DRC border.
Madagascar's top court has ruled that André Rajoelina won the last month's presidential election with 55% of the vote. The French news agency AFP reports that supporters of his rival Marc Ravalomanon have taken to the streets of the capital in protest. Ravalomanon alleged there were significant irregularities in the voting, although international monitors say they saw no evidence of fraud. Ravalomanon was president of the impoverished nation from 2002 to 2009. He was forced out of office by street protests led by Rajoelina. The army installed Rajoelina as president, and he governed until 2014. Minutes past the hour. This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. The EU issued a statement today calling for countries to unite and allow the rescue migrant ships Sea-Watch and Sea-Eye to dock at a safe port. The vessels have been stranded at sea for over 2 weeks with a total of 49 migrants on board the ships. In addition, 18 charities are also calling for urgent action to bring the migrants to safety. Meanwhile, Italian Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini is fighting with two local mayors who say Italy should accept the migrants despite a government ban on accepting them. I spoke with reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome about the latest migrant developments.
Margherita Schinas, the spokeswoman for the European Commission, which is the executive body of the EU, said today that the European Union is urging countries to show their concrete solidarity and allow the 49 migrants trapped on these two humanitarian ships to disembark at a safe port without delay. Now, she said that several member states had expressed their willingness to contribute to this common effort, but so far there's been no real indication of any country that would come forward to accept the migrants. Germany has indicated some interest in taking some of the migrants, and the Italian government seems quite divided about what to do. Some indications from Deputy Prime Minister Luigi Di Maio saying that women and children should be allowed to disembark, but so far there hasn't been a coordinated response from these countries to come together and work out precisely where these migrants might be able to disembark at a safe port.
Do we have any word on the condition of the migrants?
Well, yesterday there were reports that some of the migrants were refusing to eat. Now there's been a statement today on Twitter from Sea-Watch saying that despite a tense situation on board after 18 days for some of these migrants, that everybody was eating again, and stressed that once again that they were waiting for a solution from the EU. Last week, 24 humanitarian groups, including Amnesty International, Save the Children and the United Nations International Organization for Migration, called on the European Union to offer a safe port to both these vessels.
What is the Italian Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini? What is the situation with him and some local mayors?
Well, we've seen divisions emerging between the Italian government and mayors, the mayor of Palermo and the mayor of Naples, in particular calling for a kinder approach, willing to welcome some of these migrants. But we've also seen divisions emerging between the two deputy prime ministers, Matteo Salvini and the other deputy prime minister, Luigi Di Maio, from the Five Star Movement, a little bit more to the left, suggesting that there should be a softer approach, and with Mr. Di Maio saying that women and children should be protected and should be welcomed. So we're seeing divisions there. We're also seeing a bitter diplomatic standoff between Italy and Malta. Malta saying that it wasn't that country's responsibility. Malta has allowed these NGO rescue ships to shelter from the bad weather, has allowed them to top up their supplies, but still refusing to allow the migrants to disembark in Malta. So we seem to be going around in circles here. And Matteo Salvini, the Interior Minister, has kept up his very hard line, saying Italian ports are closed to human traffickers, and if we give in, the traffickers will start making money again, and the NGOs simply don't respect the rules and will simply go back to helping the traffickers. So very strong words from him, and also saying that his priority is to help the 5 million Italians who are living in poverty and not to help migrants.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission has tasked journalists to take steps fully and fairly to cover female candidates in this year's elections. Officials at the commission's gender division say male politicians have enjoyed more media coverage to the detriment of female candidates, who sometimes get displaced for lack of adequate exposure. Ajioma Thomas-Odia writes on gender affairs for The Guardian newspaper in Lagos. She spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the coverage of female candidates in the run-up to the February elections. She says female candidates deserve more coverage to expose them to the people.
Yes, I think there is a media marginalization of women in gender reporting, because we see that in the media, most times we have, when issues around women are mentioned, it goes in line with the female gender. It just has to boil around there. But when it comes to mainstream politics, only the men are seen. What we have is women just coming out to talk because they feel, okay, maybe they don't have more men to even air or showcase. And then they just bring in the women. Okay, let's fill them up. Okay, it feels like there are other women who needs to be seen. And however, we also see in some of our media reporting, like a newspaper sometime published a woman who is a presidential aspirant, and they refer to her as a mom of five. It's really demeaning for a woman, because she's a woman who has what it takes to stand out just like the men. And then all they could see about her was the fact that she's a mom of five kids.
How can the media ensure good coverage for the female candidates?
The media can ensure good coverage for the female candidates by ensuring that for every male candidate that is talked about, their female counterparts are put alongside. We can't always keep relegating women to the background. We can't always keep putting women to say, okay, let's allow them be in the female desk. Let's put them in the female column. Let's keep them at that part. We should always make sure that for every male House of Rep member that is coming out, we should also tell the number of female House of Rep members that are also contesting for that position and then put them on the same pedestal. We can't always keep putting all the men in the forefront and then tell the women, okay, let's have you in the female column.
Some media practitioners believe it is the responsibility of the political parties to front the female candidates for media coverage. What's your reaction to this?
I accept it. It is actually something that should be taken seriously. A lot of these women who are political candidates are actually come out as, they mostly do praise singing for their political parties. When they have their male political counterparts, when they promise them political appointments, they step down. And sometimes, most of these political parties will not give it to you on a platter. The women have to always stand on their rights and demand and insist that I am coming out for this and I want to get it. At least the two major political parties actually have something for women. But how strong is it? How are these women demanding for what belongs to them? The men, after the 2019 election, for the next election coming 2023, right? They already know who is coming out. They already know who should be in that position. But the women will wait till that 2023 to start coming out and arranging themselves. I was at a Lagos women political event, just Lagos political women event, sometime like 4 months ago. They were just forming a group of women who are coming out for senators, House of Rep, councillors, chairman. And all I was asking is, how can you people be coming out now? Election is almost 7 months from then, and you're coming out to say you want to contest. These men that you are contesting against have started 3 years ago, 4 years ago, even 5 years ago. And so these are the things that make it look like the women are not doing what they should be doing. The moment they decide that after every elections they start their grassroots work, they do all the campaigns they need to do from the grassroots, they engage themselves just like the men. A man who sees that you have what it takes will not even contest. He won't argue.
That was Adeoma Thomas Odia, who writes on gender affairs for the Guardian newspaper in Lagos. She spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye. At least three people died when two passenger trains collided in Pretoria this morning. More than 300 people were injured, many of them seriously. South African Emergency Services officials say it is possible there will be more fatalities. In today's accident, a packed commuter train slammed into a stopped train at the Mountain View station in the South African capital. A year ago, 19 people died in one of the country's worst train accidents when a passenger train traveled from Port Elizabeth to Johannesburg hit a truck at a crossing. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the rest of the news for the day, please tune in to VOA. And thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Anger over rising prices, shortages of bread and fuel, and a cash crisis has incited demonstrations across Sudan and against President Omar al-Bashir. Is Sudan in the precipice of change? An in-depth discussion on the politics of Sudan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.